thank you for listening to CASDA EdCast, where we explore issues and ideas of K-12 education and speak with teachers and administrators about their experiences serving the needs of students in our region.
Okay, welcome everybody to another CASDA EdCast. This is Mike Piccirillo. I'm the Executive Director of CASDA. And today we're going to be continuing a conversation about partnerships and collaborations between K-12 and higher education and a variety of different partners. And with us today as our guest speaker is Dr. Jason Lane, who's the Interim Dean of the School of Education at University of Albany. Welcome, Dr. Lane.
Good morning, Mike. Glad to be with you.
Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. I know we're all meetinged out and we've all been on Zoom, seems like forever now, even though it's only a couple of months. But we really do appreciate your time today. And we really are excited to talk about partnerships and collaborations between higher ed and K-12 and higher ed and other partners within the higher ed realm and also within communities. So I wanted to start though, because I want to start with a topic that I think is really important. And I know you have led significantly important work on, and that is in the partnership with School of Ed and K-12 in terms of the development of an incredible website with an enormous amount of resources valuable to educators in K-12. So could you talk about that?
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to. And thanks again for having me join you today for this. It's a great conversation. And, you know, it's this year, of course, marks the 70th anniversary of CASDA and the relationship between CASDA and the School of Ed. So what a great opportunity to talk about partnerships in that context, I think.
Definitely.
In this case, when the pandemic struck, obviously we all had to pivot quickly to new forms of learning and learning and working from home. And the School of Education has long been a leader nationally in the delivery of online education, and we offer a number of programs online, and we study how this works. And so we thought it was important as a partner with K-12 to think about how we might be able to support them in this effort, as they too have had to go into the remote learning environment. And so we launched a new website, as you noted, which is labeled www.remoteed.org. And essentially, it is a clearinghouse of resources that have been vetted and curated by our faculty and students that provide, that are online, that are free, that will help both teachers and parents navigate this new educational environment. And it's organized by grade level, it's organized by topic, so that people can more easily sort through what is a growing array of resources that are being made available via the internet. But it's more than that, though. It also provides tips and ideas and practices on how to effectively deal with remote education. And it's geared toward parents and it's geared toward teachers. And there's topics about how do you craft a day in a remote environment? How do you help children with special needs, learning in a remote environment? And then beyond that, we decided it was important that we continue to foster a community of practice around this. And so, we've worked with CASDA, we've worked with Capital Region BOCES and Questar 3 and others to think about ways that we could bring people together on a more regular basis, using online virtual environments to foster greater conversations. And so we've been hosting these Wednesday webinars, community conversations, we call them, on a variety of topics that have ranged from mental health to special education needs to dealing with issues of equity and inclusion during times of COVID-19. And it's been great. Like you all and your webinars, we've seen a lot of turnout, ranging from 50 to 200. But again, we're bringing teachers in and talk. Last week our session was on, we had six New York State Teachers of the Year come and talk about their experiences and their thoughts in the future of learning. What does this mean? And so it isn't us just talking about it. It's us providing a forum to bring people together from across the sectors to talk about ways that we can collectively move forward in this environment.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's a necessary space to create for people to have these conversations. That's, as you said, that's one of the things that CAS is doing as well. What have you learned from these conversations and from the feedback that you're getting from K-12 and others who are, interacting with the School of Education through these, these different initiatives?
There's a lot that we're learning from, and I think we're going to continue to learn. There's no doubt in my mind the pandemic is going to reset the way we think about education and do education. I think, you know, one of the things it has done, because we've had to close schools but continue learning, is it has thrust parents into a new role regarding the education of their children or guardians. And, you know, it has brought parents to the forefront of that learning experience. And so I think it has redefined the relationship between parents, children, and schools. And parents are under as much stress as anybody as they're navigating both remote work and remote learning. But, you know, parents are hungry for more information because they want to support their children to be successful even in this new environment. And so what we're learning is that parents are looking for new ways to learn about how they can help the educational process and support their children's learning. You know, I think the move to this environment has heightened and expanded issues of inequity in education, which has got to be top of mind for many of us. Certainly the digital divide was already significant for those who had access to tablets and devices, as well as high-speed internet, that they can do all this stuff virtually, and those who don't. You know, there are families that have more tablets than they know what to do with, and there are families that have one iPhone that they're sharing among their kids and trying to do their work at their same time, if they even have access to Wi-Fi. Great divides there that we need to think about how do we address those moving forward, particularly if we're back in this environment again a year from now. And I think for teachers too, K-12 has long used technology in the classrooms, right? In fact, very much a leader in that space, but using technology to deliver education remotely is much more foreign across the board in K-12 than has been in higher ed. We've been doing that for a decade or so now. So as we think about this also from a teacher prep perspective, what do we think about the skills that teachers are going to need moving forward? Not just in the classroom in the traditional sort of way, but if we're back in this environment, making sure they've got the skill sets to be able to pivot learning and deliver it no matter where it might take place.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think we're all looking at some significant change to the way in which we do our work for the long term. And I guess it remains to be seen exactly what that's going to look like. And probably it's going to be pretty fluid and probably be changing on the fly as we go forward to some degree. So I was interested in learning a little bit more about how this whole crisis on a financial level has impacted higher ed, has impacted the university, the School of Education. We were talking with Jim Dexter as a companion podcast to this one about BOCES and how BOCES operate. And it was interesting because he talked about a lot of things that I think people don't really understand about the BOCES. And so I bet you there's probably people who will listen to this podcast that don't really understand higher ed that well in terms of funding and the impact of this pandemic on higher ed. And could you talk a little bit about that and how that maybe spurs you on to seek out new partnerships and new collaborations and, you know, or maybe reinvigorating some partnerships and collaborations that maybe hadn't been operating at full speed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, I think like all of education in all the country and all the world, frankly, higher education is dealing with the financial reset that we're grappling with. You know, we think of particularly public higher education. SUNY Albany is a public institution. You know, we get a combination of funding from the state, and of course, the state's waiting to see what the federal government's going to do in terms of bailouts. And once we figure that out, the state's going to know what its financial package looks like. And then, like for K-12, right, very likely there will be some reductions, and we'll have to figure out what that looks like and, you know, how to deal with that. The other piece that we have is obviously tuition revenues that come in. And like all institutions, it's a big component of our enrollment. And you know, all of higher education is trying to look at what those enrollments will look like come fall. And there's just a lot of unknowns right now, because right, everybody is trying to figure out what fall looks like. And from parents to students to faculty and administrators, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty about that. So, you know, if you look at the numbers nationally, you know, the expectations are higher ed enrollment will probably dip somewhere between 14% and 17%. All right. When I, you know, that's just not sure where it's all going to land right now. No one's quite certain, but there'll be a reduction in students, which means obviously a reduction in tuition. And so, you know, the universities are having to think about sort of how to make those shifts and grapple with them, same as the K-12s do, and prioritizing their expenditures costs. You know, for the School of Ed in particular, I'll say right now, our numbers are looking very strong. We are up in our applications. We're seeing a lot of interest in a range of programs. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, we've been in the online space for about two decades now. In fact, we're a top 10 in the country in the delivery of online graduate programs, at least according to U.S. News and World Report. So we have strong graduate programs. We're already online. And I think that has been a boon for us as people have looked to continue their education, knowing if I have to go remotely, why not go somewhere that's a proven deliverer of high quality online education, right? So
definitely, that makes sense. Yeah.
We're seeing great upticks in some of our online programs, particularly those that do online teaching and learning, like our master's in curriculum design, instructional technology. Our literacy program enrollments are way up. Interestingly also, the program's not online, but our secondary program, is just the enrollments are going through the roof right now, which to me is showing interest in education and teaching. And, you know, people are looking for their career paths or coming back to get their certification, move into teaching. So that's all been great and positive. And of course, in all of that, we work with our partners in K-12 schools. And I think that's where the real issue is going to come in the fall. You know, the training of teachers is a joint effort, right? We provide the educational component to it. And of course, we work with the schools to make sure that they're trained and in the classrooms and doing their observations and doing the student teaching work. And that's been a pivot for us this year as schools have closed, how to deal with that, the student teaching components. And we've been working closely with a lot of our partners to sort of figure out how those students might be able to work with teachers, even in this remote environment, to continue to get their hours. And come fall, of course, schools are all scrambling to figure out what the fall will look like. And so, you know, we're trying to be in the wings to sort of, once they get some certainty about what that looks like, to make sure we're there to continue the preparation of teachers, because we're going to continue to need teachers moving forward. And we've just got to make sure we continue to have those strong relationships with our K-12 partners, that we're providing those opportunities for these future teachers. And we are continuing to fill out the pipeline of teachers, right? So we've got the next generation coming through.
Yeah, it was great to hear that there are people, there's an increased interest out there in the education field. That's really nice to hear, because it certainly seems like what's going on right now with all the uncertainty, you would think that people would be avoiding the field of education. And so that's great to hear. I certainly know that I experienced firsthand as a clinical supervisor the struggle of the shift to remote learning when two young people that I was working with, it was difficult to really provide them the kind of support that I would normally have, because they were working in a much different environment. So I guess we have to figure all of those things out as we go forward.
Absolutely. And there are models out there we can look at. Mental health. We have programs in mental health, counseling psychology, mental health counseling. You know, they've been doing telecounseling for years, right? Mm-hmm. Most of our students are trained more in clinical experiences, and they're on the ground. But the sector as a whole has done this for a long time, and so they know how to do telecounseling. And we've shifted to telecounseling at the university, both to support our students and to support the community. So you know, there, I think there are models, telehealth, you know, obviously medicine to reach into rural areas, that we could look at as a sector to look more at ways that we can deliver teaching remotely or doing some of this work more remotely. You know, others have done it. I think we can do it too. It just, we've all had to pivot so quickly. We haven't had a chance to reflect on what that means.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about community partnerships that have either, you know, become more prominent during this time, or that you have, you know, been working on to prepare for the future?
We're
looking at
one of the things we've really have taken a hard look at the last couple of years is how to diversify the teacher education pipeline. We all know this is an issue in terms of making sure that our teaching workforce reflects the changing demographics of New York State. All the research shows that the more that students see teachers like them in the classrooms, the more likely they're going to be successful throughout their academic careers. So we've really been trying to build some partnerships around that that area, and bringing more diverse individuals with diverse backgrounds into teaching. You know, and so we've worked with Questar 3 and their new visions program. We're going to be launching an initiative. We were going to be launching it next year. We're still in discussions if it's going to work out or not because of COVID-19. But in the next year or two, you know, the hope is that we're going to have a cohort of future teachers in their senior year of high school on the UAlbany campus taking courses, you know, from us and beginning to sort of develop a pipeline of teaching that way. We've been working closely with NYSET over the past year, the teachers union, on some initiatives to partner with community-based organizations and those churches, nonprofit organizations, and others that could influence individuals at a younger age, even middle school level, to begin thinking about teaching and the power of teaching early on and get them excited about that. We know that for some, in certain communities, you know, they don't have a great experience in school early on, and so they choose not to pursue teaching as a career. And we're trying to find other ways to reach individuals who really are passionate. Maybe they're an exceptional Sunday school teacher, right? And they show great interest in teaching others. And so, you know, they might be a high schooler or ready teaching Sunday school. How do we help encourage them in different ways to come into teaching and pursue teaching and be the power and agent of change? So, you know, we've been working with NYSET in partnership with all these community-based organizations and school districts to think about different models that we could begin to better encourage individuals from all different backgrounds to come into teaching and work that way. So that's sort of some of the initiatives we're working on right now on around the teacher pipeline.
Yeah, and I would also mention the work that School of Education, Capital Region BOCES, and CASA are doing right now to put together a Tap the Leader program too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
No, a great program. And again, you know, we need great leaders in our schools, and there's a dearth of them of interest for right now, right, of people wanting to move into it. And we know from the research, people are more likely to pursue that track if they're tapped to do it. Somebody else identifies them and said, we think you have potential. And so we're really excited about this partnership working with you all and Capridge and BOCES to develop these pipelines and to identify people who could be great future leaders of schools and districts.
Yeah, and the nice thing is it's really designed to be done in a virtual space too. So,
right.
You know, we're not necessarily going to be inhibited by school closures if that occurs in the fall.
Yep.
So we're developing a model that allows us to move ahead regardless of what's going on around us to some degree. I can't totally control that, but. So I was just curious. I mean, a lot of people right now in education, especially, are talking about, you know, reimagining New York, right? Reimagining mm-hmm. public education in the state. I was wondering what are your hopes? What are you hoping for in the future, near and you know, longer term for public education at the higher ed level, at the, you know, K-12 level? What are the things that you might be looking to hope to have happen?
You know, what comes out of this, I hope, is that we are able to redesign ourselves based around student needs in a different way, probably, than maybe we have now. I think, you know, I hear, you know, there are some students who have been very successful while in school that have not been as engaged or successful in the remote learning environment. On the other hand, there are students who have not been successful in school, but have become wildly successful in this new remote learning environment and have taken really to education. And so there's something there we've got to learn about. What is it about that schooling process for certain students that hasn't worked well, whereas remote learning has shown they can excel academically, right, in that environment? And so I don't know what that is entirely, but I think there's a lot that we can learn from this that to figure out better ways to support a broader range of students in their academic pursuits. And I hope we learn from that. And obviously we always talk about individualized learning. I think this even takes it to a new level that there may be some other ways that we can do learning that will help a broader range of students. And again, not one size fits all for everybody, but I hope we'll learn from this what we can, the positive aspects of ways in which remote learning has certainly helped certain students become more successful and academically engaged moving forward. I really hope it leads to a renewed sense of community in our schools and the ways in which parents should be involved in the education of their children. We all know education is something that really needs to be a holistic look and greater engagement, I think, across communities. And so if there are things we can take away from this that build positive relations, more positive relationships. We already have great examples of positive relationships, so I don't want to say that, but we could build even stronger relationships between our schools, between our communities, between our homes. And you know, hopefully there's takeaways there that we think more holistically about the education of our children and the ways in which we come together collectively to make sure that they have a high quality learning experience moving forward. So those are a couple of things that I would hope coming out of this.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, to go back to something you said earlier, I think the focus on equity has to continue. The work has to continue to address these inequities that we have in our system, so that we can, you know, ultimately meet that goal of supporting all students to be successful. And I think that's going to be a continuing area of work that we need to continue to focus our energies in.
Yeah, and it's one of the great quotes I heard coming out of this whole thing is it's hard to focus on Bloom's taxonomy of learning until you've met Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think, you know, both K-12 and higher ed, for many students being home more full-time also has exacerbated food insecurity issues. Whether that be free lunch that one gets from school, or even at our level, every SUNY campus now has a food pantry because food insecurity is such an issue for our students. A number of our students, because they were displaced out of residence halls, some of them didn't have homes to go back to, and this was their safe place. So how do we think about those issues also? Or they've gone back to environments that are less than hospitable to where they're learning elsewhere. And, high-flying students who've done exceptionally well when they were here on campus, again, struggle when they go back home because the environment they're in there is not supportive, right? Or is not conducive to learning or whatever that might be. They couldn't get Wi-Fi, or the family situation is problematic. And so to your point, there's a lot of these issues that we've got to really think about, because I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. We may be back in the fall. A number of us are planning, but what does that mean exactly to be back in the fall, right? We're still going to have to be socially distanced. It's going to reduce capacity in classrooms. At least for us, we're looking at reduction of capacity. A large number of our classes will be hybrid or still online, even though we want students back on campus. The fall this year will not look like the fall last year, and I don't think the fall next year will look like the fall last year. So there will be changes. I just don't know what those changes are entirely going to be, but we've got to adapt and change and try to figure out what we can learn now, what we've done, to continue to improve the learning experience, which is what we're all dedicated to doing.
No doubt. I have great confidence that with your leadership, the School of Ed will certainly adapt. It has done a great job since early March in adapting and changing and doing incredible work to support K-12. It's greatly appreciated. CASA greatly appreciates the partnership that we have with the university and the School of Education. And we look to continue to strengthen that relationship and collaborate further to support K-12 and higher ed. So those are great.
I agree with you entirely, Mike. I'll just note, the School of Education was founded in 1844 as New York's first public teachers college. And I think we take it very seriously that we were, that New York State founded us first as a way to create, I think, and improve education across the state, right? That was our original mandate. That was our goal. We were publicly chartered and funded to do that. And so we take very seriously that role. And I think that's why we are so keen on having great partnerships with CASDA, with our K-12 community. Because really, it's in our ethos and our DNA to help improve education across the New York State. That's why we were created, that's why we're here, and that's why we're going to do moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same reason CASDA was created 70 years ago.
Yep.
Was to support public education in the Capital Region, and you're right, it's a part of our DNA, it's our mission. And, we love to do that in partnership with others, and especially with the School of Education, because it's a great organization. And we love working with you and your professors. So I wanted to ask you one last thing. Was there anything that we didn't talk about that you might want to share in regards to this particular topic?
I would just say this, that the issues we face in education are complex. Organizational theorists would call them wicked because they are just so difficult to tease out and to identify solutions for. And the reality is it takes cross-sector approaches, I think, to really transform education and ensure that students are successful. Education is a cradle-to-career sort of initiative. We need to find better ways to bridge, I think, the divide that often happens between higher ed and K-12. We need to be collective and engaged partners in this. But I think it goes beyond education, right? We need to be partnering with health. We need to be partnering with social welfare. We need to be partnering with others that are more in the community or aware of the social determinants of education. Because it isn't just what happens in the classroom, right? It's what happens at home. It's what happens in the communities. It's what happens in churches. It's what happens in organizations that affect the learning of our students. And so I'm thrilled to be here and be invited. And to your point, the partnership, I think, between the School of Education and CASDA is exceptional. I've not been around the entire time, so I can't say it's never been stronger, but I will say I think it is incredibly strong right now. I'm thrilled with that. But we've got to continue to build out these partnerships and build a more robust and holistic approach, I think, to supporting students across the Capital Region and to find better ways to ensure more of our students are successful moving forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and I look forward to that work side by side with the School of Education. So I want to thank again Dr. Jason Lane for joining us today. Appreciate your time, Jason.
Always thrilled to be able to be with you. Appreciate this invitation. Happy to come back anytime.
All right, great. We will have you back. And so thanks everybody for listening. And until next time, be well.
Thank you all.